time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Paul, I know you worked in Seattle, but the grunge singing over here.
It's not grunge. That is just...
Wait, what is it?
That is ZZ Top.
Hello, so, there are no words coming out of your mouth.
Exactly.
Sounds.
But it sounds like I'm singing LaGrange by ZZ Top.
It sounds like Eddie Vedder is singing.
How?
Understand.
Well, no. I mean, if you want me to sound like Pearl Jam, I can really go in. I guess everything that I do, whenever I sing it, ends up sounding like Scott Stapp from Creed or Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam.
Never forget the "Can I Take You Higher?"
Can you take me higher? I'll stop
at the Cowboys game. Nick Caserio, hey, he met with the media yesterday.
Is he going to take us higher in the coming NFL draft?
That's a great transition.
Not really. I think everyone wants to die right now. But it was interesting to hear him talk. You were actually on the...
Boots on
the ground. That's the saying, yes. Any major takeaways from what you heard from Nick Caserio?
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, Nick Caserio is Nick Caserio in that he comes from the Patriots organization, and he never gives too much away. He keeps it close to the vest, you could say. But I do think that he gave some nuggets that were really interesting. Some of that had to do with picks. There's been a lot of speculation. Will the Texans trade back, trade up, whatever? Obviously, we know the Texans have a lot of needs. Nick Caserio didn't go into the needs and specifically what they're targeting, as we would not expect any general manager in the NFL to do. But he did have some interesting nuggets. What were your impressions when you kind of followed it on Twitter and heard the audio?
So after the fact, just a reminder of where this organization is and how far away they are from competing. When you hear Nick Caserio essentially say, look, we can't trade out of number three, it's not the end of the world. But that was something I honestly, Vanessa, was expecting to see the Texans do. I thought that for sure they would try to get out of that three spot and to get more picks. But Caserio revealed to us yesterday it's not that easy. Here he is at yesterday's press conference.
The reality is probably very few teams are going to want to come up to three. I mean, just being honest. So, and that's okay. So probably pick at three and then 13, you know, could we go up? Could we go down? You know, talk to kind of, you know, I'd say over the next week or so, you're going to talk to different teams, just more about positioning, about what's their philosophy, what's their willingness to kind of move. Some teams are just set, like, we're not moving, we're going to pick. Some teams only want to move down. Some teams say, you know what, no, we haven't really thought about that, but okay, maybe we consider moving up. So I think it's important just to be open-minded and more to be flexible.
You want to be open-minded. You want to be flexible. But how flexible are you going to have to be in a quarterback draft class that doesn't have a lot of guys that people are going to trade everything that they have to move up? Like what we saw with the San Francisco 49ers last year, moving up to the third spot so that they could get eventually Trey Lance. There's no one there.
I appreciated Nick Caserio putting his name on the statement of it is difficult to get rid of that number three pick, because you always hear the draft analysts say, and the Daniel Jeremiah's of the world in the mock draft, well, I have people telling me that it's going to be hard to get out of it. And Nick Caserio's like, no, it is. And so they're more apt to trade that 13th pick and see what they can do with it. The other narrative that's been with this specific draft is that there's really no consensus number one, and there's no consensus top five. It's changed. Aiden Hutchinson, Kyle Hamilton, you name it. Their position on the draft board has changed. Some of that after the combine, and some of that just the general ebb and flow of draft predictions. Nick Caserio talked about that, about how this is kind of an unpredictable draft.
I don't think there's consensus on any player. I think if you talk to different teams, you talk to different people, who's the top player at this position? There's six players, you get six different answers. So I'd say, you know, it could make it a little bit more hectic, but you have to trust your information, trust your resources, trust your preparation, trust your evaluation of the player, and then just be able to say, okay, this is how we view the player, this is what we think his role is going to be, but ultimately the player's performance is going to determine what their role is going to be. But, you know, we look at some of the mock drafts or just I'd say for more general positioning, not, well, this player is projected to go 15th overall. Well, we're picking 13th. Is he going to be there? Not necessarily. You're trying to kind of get a general vicinity or range.
Yeah, so crapshoot is the term he used, and I appreciate him using that term because that's certainly what the draft has felt like. And when you look at guys like Lance Erline that make these incredible mock drafts, they have so much research, they put so many sources into it. It is interesting to see how much it's changed and how some of the mock drafts have Malik Willis going number 4th, and some of them don't even have a quarterback being taken in the top 10.
Yeah, I've seen one that had the Lions taking Malik Willis 2nd.
Yeah.
And we all thought that Aiden Hutchinson was the consensus out of Michigan, the defensive lineman, number 1 overall pick, but now all of a sudden Georgia's Trevon Walker has entered the equation. If we're looking at the actual odds in Vegas, Walker's not that far behind Hutchinson. So all of a sudden, a guy that we didn't even know was necessarily going to be a top 10, top 15 pick a couple of weeks ago has entered into the conversation of top 2. But that still leaves the Texans at number 3, and there's no consensus what should be done after Hutchinson and Walker go 1 and 2, which I think is more and more likely every single day.
There's been a lot of talk about what positions the Texans should pick. Do you think the Texans should go by position, or do you think that it's better for them to say, you know what, best player available because we need everything? We're not going to eye a cornerback or a quarterback or a, you know, running back, whatever. Like, we are going to take the best player available on the board.
You got to find the positive in any situation that you're in life, but also in this. And the Texans stink. So one of the positives of stinking is that you really can go any direction that you want. It's all a matter of what do you prioritize. And we haven't really learned that yet when it comes to Nick Caserio. And when it comes to Lovie Smith, we have a track record of what he liked in his previous stops. Chicago, Tampa Bay. And his input, as Caserio alluded to yesterday, is certainly going to be a part of whatever the Texans do. But we really do not know what Caserio views as the foundational building blocks of a franchise. If he had his pick of any position, we don't know that yet. And we're never going to hear that from him, as he always keeps things close to
the vest.
Right, there you go. Nailed it. Perfect. So I think the benefit of being in this spot is you can do whatever you want. It might work out. It might not work out. Obviously, there's that whole element of it. But yeah, I don't think that there's any position particularly that they should be going afterwards. I wouldn't mind an offensive lineman. I wouldn't mind a pass rusher. I wouldn't mind a defensive back. I wouldn't even really mind that much of a quarterback being taken at that 3rd overall spot. You know, I feel like you are legitimately a blank slate.
Quarterback is the one position I would not want the Texans to take because I want them to see what they can do with Davis Mills. I think they're in a weird spot right now where obviously they just lost their franchise quarterback to, among other things, him being mad about the organization. I think they were perfectly fine to let him go after all of
Sausage.
The allegations,
yeah.
Accusations, whatever term you want to use. I'd like to see what they do with Davis Mills, but to your point, there are a lot of franchises that view the draft, even in a year where there's not great quarterbacks. You keep throwing at the dartboard until you find one.
You should. And honestly, you have so many picks the next couple of years. I don't think you should entirely rule out the idea of quarterback because you never know. I know in years past that I have thought that certain quarterbacks are going to be great. They have stunk, vice versa. Josh Allen, the most recent example. So you never really do know. No one knows anything, which is fun. It's very uncertain, the NFL draft, every single year. I feel like, though, the idea of going into next year with Davis Mills, there's a lot of people that are bored by that idea. I would count myself as one of them. I am expecting him to probably not be the franchise quarterback of the future. No indictment on him. We'll see what they can do with him this year, and I don't expect them to draft a quarterback. I don't think they should rule out anything, though,
but
except
the
for kicker
quarterback
at 3rd overall.
But can he be the quarterback that gets you through a couple of years of a rebuild?
I guess.
Although,
but who can't get you as a quarterback through the years of a rebuild?
Right.
You know, if you stink, you can put anybody back under center. I mean, shoot, you could go and you could assign Marcus Mariota or Mitchell Trubisky or some of these other schlubs that have jobs again and might be getting starting gigs entirely because they were drafted 2nd overall.
Nick Caserio does not like that word, rebuild. We found that out yesterday at the press conference as well.
And I've never used the term rebuild. I think rebuild has kind of been an external term. I think what we've focused on is kind of building our team. So how do we build our team? Okay, what are the resources we have available? What are the assets that we have to deploy?
I like Nick a lot, actually, but that did make me laugh. It's not a rebuild, it's building.
Okay. Well, thank you for the clarification, Nick. It doesn't matter at all in the slightest. And everyone views it that way. No matter what label you're going to put on it, that's not changing how other people view this. This team was AFC South champions multiple years in a row. And what do they have to show for it? Nothing. They go back to...
Doesn't matter, Brian. AFC champs.
AFC South champs. That's true. It was quite the run. For whatever you want to make fun of with the Bill O'Brien run, I mean, they did have marginal success. So you are rebuilding. You are going back to the bottom. Will we be here at the end? Your favorite artist. The greatest artist of all time. I just quoted him. Because he started at the bottom and now he's here.
All right.
He's a really good artist.
Kyle Hamilton, you need to calm down. Drake, not the best artist ever. But to your point, does the language matter? No. I think you win games. I think you try.
He doesn't like the R word, though. I like how Cody Stutes labeled it R word.
Yeah, R.
Just say rebuild. I thought he said, like, someone asked him a question, like a hot question. It was like, hey, Nick, are you some kind of... insert R word. I was like, whoa, damn, bro. And
yeah,
and
so Nick Cody Stutes, who is on...
The Wheelhouse.
Yeah, from 3 to 7, is the one that was nice enough to send out the individual audio clips so we could use them for our show, and one of them was labeled, Nick Caserio doesn't like the R word.
I think he did that on purpose. I think he knew that inquisitive minds would wonder what was said there.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, the OG is not looking to make changes. We have more on the Stros next.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
I just wish you all got to hear what I hear from Paul, who sings during the breaks.
What's wrong with that?
I didn't. I said I wish they got to hear what I hear.
I'm the songbird of a generation.
I love it.
And by generation, I mean early 2000s lovers of all the bands that sounded exactly the same.
A very specific time and a very specific genre, for sure.
Creed, Lifehouse, The Calling, they were all the same band.
Falling even more in love.
Where are you? That was never... And then there's Hell, I could an hour.
Yes.
Where are you?
Very melancholy songs.
Oh, yeah.
But good, nonetheless. All right, the Astros hosting the Blue Jays tonight. First time George Springer will return to Houston. Because he was on the IL last year, both times that the Blue Jays played the Astros.
They should have a montage on the Jumbotron. They should. Will they? I assume they will. This is one of those players that actually deserves, Vanessa.
I was going to say, is this you?
A tribute video.
Because not every player that gets tribute videos in sports deserves it.
Everyone seems to get one in basketball.
Yeah.
Let's think of just some random generic Rocket. John Wall. Say he ends up on another team. Will he get a tribute video for the... Did he play any games for the Rockets? I think so.
No, he did.
He did play games for the Rockets. So you have like a highlight of him playing a game for the Rockets, and you have a highlight of him sitting in the crowd watching a game too.
And then you have a highlight of Rafael Stone going, it's not a big deal, guys. We're two adults. We sat down and just decided that it wasn't best for him to play.
What's the
media talking about?
Springer actually deserves one. And I'm actually looking forward to seeing it, and I hope that the Astros post it on social as well.
Yeah, that would be nice. They did congratulate Carlos Correa on winning Houston Sports Awards Player of the Year.
We talked about that yesterday. Yeah. And again, Gurriel should have won it, but it's cool that Carlos won it. And I miss Carlos, but Jeremy Pena's done pretty nice so far. And I hope
he
keeps up.
George Springer. He was awesome.
Well, he was.
Great guy.
If you asked anyone in that clubhouse, everyone would have told you he is the heart and soul of this team. And I believed it. And I was surprised that they let him walk just with that in mind. But one of the big things that has been his problem is injuries. And if I'm not mistaken, a little banged up right now, too.
He should be able to play tonight, but last year certainly was proof that he still is going to be struggling with those injuries. Meanwhile, the OG, Dusty Baker, not looking to make any changes. Astros fans may have had strong reactions to Jake Odorizzi out of the starting rotation, but Dusty Baker, according to Brian McTaggart, says that he's going to Jake Odorizzi will remain in the starting rotation. Quote, it's only been two starts, Baker said. That would be the shortest leash in history. Hopefully his next start, he'll be better.
I mean, was that even a start? It was like a relief appearance. He lasted two-thirds of an inning. Look, I don't feel like if you pull the plug on Odorizzi now, you're pulling the plug on him for the rest of the year. You should see if there is a more viable option. And Christian Javier came in, and I'm going to butcher his pronunciation. I see the word Javier, and I always
it's
in my mind.
Javier.
I know, but I always think to myself, is it Javier, which is not that at all.
I could make fun of you, but I'm not much better.
No, this is one of those things where I see something, and I sound it out phonetically in my head, and then I'm like, wait a second, this is from another language. Anyway, Christian, this guy pitched really well in relief of Jake Odorizzi, legitimately right after Odorizzi. And we've seen him start before, and he has been pretty good. His numbers as a starter last year, maybe he's not going deep in games, but how many guys go deep in games these days anymore? I don't see what being stubborn here does outside of make Jake Odorizzi and whatever minimal confidence he might have right now remain largely unscathed. But this doesn't help the team. He isn't pitching well. Why do you think it's going to change? Just because the two starts being bad, you feel like, oh, well, small sample size. We got to wait until the All-Star break, like all baseball conversations.
We've gotten a lot of that on the text line and our friends on Twitch that have been saying, just wait, chill till the All-Star break. I will say this, although I'm not as panicked about the Astros maybe as some people are, the guy sitting right next to me, I agree with you on this, that it doesn't hurt to make a couple of changes. But I think from Dusty's perspective, when you've been at it this long and you've been a manager this long, maybe you're not going to quote-unquote sweat the small stuff. Maybe you say, okay, we're not even that much into the season. Jose Altuve is hurt. What the heck is going to happen with Lance McCullers Jr.? As of now, Justin Verlander looks good. Let's give this pitcher some grace and let him get through the slump. I think he's just so measured and so calm because he's seen all of it before.
No doubt. And as you get older and older, that's weirdly, you might be a little bit more blunt with things that you say, but your actions tend to be a little bit more, all right, well, let's wait. Let's see.
What
let's
age
not
does
be reactionary.
Happen?
It's starting to happen for me, amazingly.
Really?
Yeah, in certain elements of life. It's the very small things that is where I lose my mind. It's the the major things I actually can handle pretty well, incredibly. It's just something small, like someone, I don't know, not turning their blinkers on and slowing down in front of me. Like, that, to me, is where I feel like I should send them to jail.
Paul heard angry Vanessa on the phone when I... Yesterday,
oh, yeah.
Somebody wouldn't let me get over.
So you literally sweat the small stuff, but not the big stuff.
No.
But you do sweat the small
stuff. I sweat the small stuff. Yes, 100%.
Great observation,
Sean Mays behind the glass. I sweat the small stuff. It's annoying. For Dusty Baker here, you don't want him to sweat the small stuff. I get that, but I don't see why you don't try it. This is not a permanent decision. Anything that you do right now does not mean that you have to be married to said decision for the rest of the year. And there is this... There's this element of coaching, and you see this in football too, where when a decision is made, there is an expectation that that decision lasts forever. And I don't understand that. And sometimes those coaches, their egos will get in the way of them perhaps stepping back from making a decision. I would say go to the start of the 2017 season. People were really upset about the idea that the Texans were starting the year with Tom Savage under center.
Right.
And then they benched him after a half, and that for some reason was an indictment on Bill O'Brien. And I thought to myself, well, he thought Savage was more ready to go. Clearly, because of the year before, from conversations I'd had, this is a guy who did not trust his offensive line at all and did not want Watson to be thrown right into the line of fire. So he put Savage out there. But as he had said in 2017, that offensive line, you need a mobile quarterback behind it. So he pulled the trigger after the first half, and people were criticizing him for, well, why did you start Savage to start the season? It's not like they went back to Savage ever. All I'm saying is that sometimes people assume
there's a method.
Yeah, there's a method. But people also think like, hey, if you make this decision right now, you have to stick to it. And I mean, moving on from Jake Odorizzi, you can go back to Jake Odorizzi, but right now Jake Odorizzi doesn't have it. That's all I'm saying. Maybe
he's not
he will
producing,
have it.
And Christian Javier has that opportunity to step up and
make
a difference.
And Odorizzi, look, he did have some decent moments last year. I know Patrick Creighton outlined it on Twitter yesterday, where there was a stretch, I want to say from May through September, where he actually did pitch statistically at the very least pretty well. But right now he's not pitching well. So why are you going to continue to put him out there when he can't even get through an inning?
Todd, the show, one of our listeners says, I can't stand him, but I'm not sure what other option we have. Should have just re-signed Greinke at 13 mil. At least he can legit eat innings during the regular season. I guess the only argument of the other option, quote unquote, would be Javier.
Yeah. Odorizzi can eat innings for you, too. I don't think that you should be necessarily all the way out in Odorizzi, but right now, in the here and now, April 22nd of 2022, I am out on Odorizzi until he figures it out. Whether that means he has a little trip to the injured list or something like that to determine what's going on, or just a couple of days off, let him think this through.
Meanwhile, NJ.com reporting Thursday that the Yankees letter could be unsealed within a week. This is the right move. Yankees could, of course, seek a Supreme Court review. I say, of course, as if I knew that.
You know what? Please. I want to see them appeal this to the Supreme Court. Because they just look like just massive babies. This is going to do irreparable harm. No, you're going to be found out to have done things that other teams in baseball have been doing. The problem that you will have is that you were throwing stones from a glass house. And now everybody can see what's going on inside, and they're throwing the stones back. Uh-oh.
Victim complex much? Yes, the New York Yankees have it. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we are discussing a certain quarterback in the NFL who wants out. But the front office says, no way. That's next.
This is Heisman Trophy winner, College Football Hall of Famer Eddie George, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, and we are rolling along on a Friday. Happy Friday. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Alongside me, Paul Gallant. Our producer, Sean Mapes, is behind the glass. We appreciate you guys hanging with us.
What would you do if Drake did a cover of this song? Do you like the Alien Ant Farm version of... hang on a second. This isn't Billie Jean. Alien Ant Farm is the... What is the song that they do by Michael Jackson that's not Michael Jackson singing it? There we go.
Yeah, this one isn't bad. It's different.
Okay.
Annie, are you okay? This is Smooth Criminal.
Okay. I just confused those two songs. Forget how musically challenged I am.
Oh,
we move on.
I need Drake to never try Michael Jackson ever. And I need Kyle Hamilton, is it? God bless it.
Yes.
The safety from Notre Dame, to never tweet about music.
He's going to be a Texan. You're going to be so
mad. If he's a Texan, we're having words in the locker room.
You're interrogating him.
Yeah. Kyler Murray, despite really not having done a lot praiseworthy, decides to have the player empowerment ego and want out of Arizona, or wants a brand new deal. So we've all heard the story. His agent, Eric Burkhart, putting out that big letter that was really hard to read. A lot of grammatical errors. The font was difficult. They made an offer.
The small font to hide the grammatical errors.
Right. Now the Cardinals brass met with the media in kind of the same way of Nick Caserio, the pre-draft press conference. Mm-hmm. And general manager Steve Keim had this to say about whether or not they would move Kyler.
Steve, there's been a lot of speculation out there about the possibility of you guys trading Kyler. Can you rule that out?
Zero chance.
Did this situation take you by surprise?
No, I think this is the business of the NFL, and I think you see that around the league year in and year out, and it just comes with the territory.
I want Cliff's voice.
Yeah, that's a great... I will say this. Cliff is too pretty for me, but he's got a great voice.
The gravel. So
yeah, nice.
If you were to call one of those websites, check that, one of those phone hotlines, yeah, you'd be like, hey, I wanted someone that sounds like Cliff.
Yeah, the fashion isn't where I need it to be, and I think he probably would want somebody a little more feminine than me. I don't know that we'd be a good match, and I don't date coaches, by the way, but his voice, he can get it.
Okay.
Okay. Back to Kyler Murray. So Steve Keim, zero chance that they trade Kyler Murray. I actually appreciate, can I just say, I appreciate this from Steve Keim instead of doing the general manager. Well, you know, we take each situation day by day. We take the information we get. We look at how we can build a roster. He's just like straight up, nope, we are not giving in to Kyler's demands.
Do you believe him?
Yeah.
You do, 100%?
I believe Steve Keim. And I don't know that I believe what Cliff had said later in that soundbite. We didn't want to play the whole thing because it was super long, but he said that he and Kyler only talk football. They don't talk about anything contract related. And I guess that makes sense because Cliff's the coach. He's not the GM and he's certainly not the owner. But I do believe that it's maybe more of a distraction than Steve Keim and Cliff Kingsbury would like to admit.
No doubt. It's a huge distraction. This is a situation that until it is resolved, you do not 100% know the future of the Arizona Cardinals. And with Russell Wilson finally forcing his way out of town in Seattle, there definitely is a way where
there's a blueprint.
You could see this happening with Kyler Murray. The only difference is that there is no trade clause because Kyler Murray does not have that new deal. Murray would have to be willing to set out games too to get his way. So I think at this point in time, there is no drama. There could be drama maybe a couple of years from now, though, if things continue to go the way that they're going. The Cardinals do seem to have, though, most of the control here. But I hear anyone say definitive, declarative statements, be it a head coach or a general manager, Vanessa, and now I don't believe them at all.
Was it your time in Seattle that did
yeah,
you
Yeah, partly. I mean, Pete Carroll said we have no intention of trading Russell Wilson, and less than a month later they traded Russell Wilson.
Right.
I mean, it's hard to believe them 100%. I just guess when it comes to Kyler Murray's actual leverage right now, what does he have?
He doesn't, and I think that's why Steve Keim is able to, in that tone, look at a reporter and say zero chance. It takes a lot for somebody to say zero chance in a league where, and again, I like Nick Caserio, but Nick is a really good example of somebody that keeps it broad, keeps it generic, and keeps things tight within the organization. I think the fact that Kyler has no leverage, he looked awful in the playoff game. Don't forget, the first two acts of the three-act play were great for the Cardinals last year. They were great. They had the perfect record. Never forget J.J. Watt's soundbite. Maybe we're just better. But it fell apart. And a lot of that was due to Kyler Murray. So I think when you have a guy that has no leverage, you can be Steve Keim and you can look at a reporter and say, zero chance. He knows Kyler's going to see that, right?
Yeah.
Like he knows Eric Burkhart, Kyler's agent, is going to see that. And they're going to feel that power tug and that power play. But for Steve Keim, I don't think he cares because he knows Kyler has no leverage.
Right. There was last year where Aaron Rodgers, right before the draft, he essentially said, in a way, I want out of Green Bay. If there's a way to gamble on a quarterback making some sort of dramatic gesture, if not outright trade demand right before the draft, I definitely would do it with Kyler Murray.
Yeah, on draft night maybe?
Oh, 100%. Because the only thing you can do is be annoying if you're Kyler Murray. That's really all you can do is just be the biggest pain in the ass that you can and hope that the Cardinals are like, we're sick of all of this noise that we're getting. But he still is going to have to deliver as an actual player. And that's something that we have seen in spurts, but not consistently enough and not with, I think, enough durability in particular to say, yeah, I would 100% feel comfortable giving Kyler Murray a long-term extension given the way that he gets beaten up out there.
Meanwhile, A.J. Brown has expressed his displeasure with certain things in Tennessee, but Titans GM John Robinson, do we have that soundbite, Sean, on him talking about A.J. Brown? Here it is.
Some discussions with his reps. He was here a couple weeks ago, I talked to him, and we're working through that. Not going to get into any details with contract negotiations. Never have really done that. We've made it public about how we feel about A.J. and how we wanted to be a part of this football team.
Same situation as with Kyler Murray. Mm-hmm. All these guys on the rookie contracts, the leverage that they have is legitimately their availability. And if you are going to sit out games, or if you are going to sit out practices, training camp, etc., you're going to be taking a pretty heavy, at least based off of percentages, hit in your wallet. So with that in mind, okay, you don't show up, but there will probably come a point where you're like, shoot, I need money. I'll come back. And I think maybe less so with Kyler Murray because he's got that first round draft pick contract going on. But for the Deebo Samuels, for the DK Metcalfs, A.J. Brown, I think, where was A.J. Brown?
Brown, by the way, and Deebo Samuel represented by CAA's Tory Dandy, who negotiated three-year deals worth $60 million. I'm reading USA Today, by the way. Chris Godwin and Mike Williams.
Yeah, and to go back to Brown, another second round pick. The guys who are second round picks, it's a little more difficult. The fifth year option for a rookie in the NFL, if you're a first round pick, is pretty damn significant. Where if you're a second round draft pick, like, you're not making that much. And AJ Brown should be making more than what he's making. DK Metcalf. And same thing with Deebo Samuel. All of those guys, second round picks in 2019.
5535 on our text line says trade number 3 for Kyler and number 13 for Deebo. Mad or nah?
Who the hell is going to say yes to that?
That would never happen. And if Nick Caserio could pull that off.
I mean, if you could do it, yes.
If Nick Caserio could pull that off, GM of the year.
I don't.
Houston Sports Awards.
I don't like
inductee.
Trade guy. I don't like it. And it all comes from Madden. Some of these people who have played Madden,
yeah,
you do these like cheat trades where you can find a way to move one player from one franchise to the other by trading. Like, you can trade a team 4 tight ends for a quarterback in Madden. That's how wonked up the trade logic is in EA Sports, because EA Sports is a crap video game franchise. So people think that they can apply this to like the actual NFL and stuff. That is if someone called you with those proposals, you would hang up on them so quickly.
You'd say, hey, hello, is this Bill O'Brien?
I don't think you would even pick up the phone or think about texting or calling the person back if they left that as a voicemail. Like, no.
But is it something Bill O'Brien would do?
No,
if you were mad?
Not even O'Brien.
O'Brien the GM, not O'Brien the head coach. Remember, O'Brien the GM made the Hopkins trade, gave Laremy Tunsil the huge contract.
Yeah, I just want the 3rd overall pick in a draft with no quarterbacks for Deshaun Watson. That's it. Yeah.
You know? Even Bill O'Brien wouldn't do that. But you're right, in the age of Madden, that's what we have. I do like this other text, this text from 8755. I don't like this new era of players wanting to threaten teams into paying or going elsewhere. It's a struggle for the fans of the team to root for the players because they might end up leaving on their favorite team. We are definitely in a new age, and we've talked about this. We had talked to Warren Moon about it. I mean, player empowerment is a very real thing right now. And some of that's good, but some of that, you have situations where guys like Kyler Murray, who really don't have leverage, in his mind, he thinks he deserves everything that he's asking for, even though he hasn't produced.
Don't we all?
Yeah. Well, it's a separate discussion.
I deserve millions of dollars, guys. Yeah. I mean, come
Paul
on.
Paul just wants to go viral on TikTok. Paul wants to be a savage movie.
No. It's amazing that works. It just drives me absolutely bonkers that some little bleep, and I'll call them a little bleep because they suck, dancing around and wiggling their private parts, essentially. Oh. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, it is.
While lip-syncing music is considered talent. Like, yeah. Why? This app is so bad.
And it's, you know, the funny thing is, it's not just like attractive young women. That it's like adults do it.
Yes!
Too. It's freaking.
I'm doing the new trend. It's stupid. Both TikTok and Instagram, they just suck you into this mindless, like, nonstop 5-second little videos. And you go through it and you go up. And the next thing you know, you've wasted 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Does it actually make you feel better when you're done?
No, it's
you've just been
of the reasons why we have a depression epidemic in this country.
Yeah, I would say so. And my depression stems from the fact that these little bastards can make millions of dollars by doing absolutely nothing.
Paul gets so triggered when I talk about somebody who's gone viral.
I hate them.
It's actually my favorite thing.
I went viral for something actually that happened, not for wiggling my schmenzer around.
Chill, dog.
While listening to Drake's cover of Michael Jackson.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we do want your input on this. Who's a draft pick you've been completely wrong about? Either you thought they would be great and they whiffed, or you thought that they would whiff and they were great. We're getting a lot of interesting answers, and we're going to talk about that next on Vanessa and Gallant.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Free stuff! Do you want free stuff? Well, guess what? MLB The Show 22 is out now for PlayStation, Xbox, and now Nintendo Switch. Plus, you can play this cross-platform and cross-generation to the PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5, Xbox One, the new Xbox, I forget what it's called,
Oh, you can play cross-platform with anybody. It's super fun for both hardcore and casual baseball gamers. No matter your play style, MLB The Show 22 has you covered. Online co-op play, yada, yada, yada. So visit www.mlbtheshow.com for more information. And it's for PlayStation, it's for Xbox, it's for Nintendo. This is a good game. You guys want to play the game. So there you go, guys. MLB The Show 22.
Play the game. Giving it away.
Yeah.
Good times.
I used to love MVP baseball so much. It was a game that was for EA Sports. And then MLB The Show took over, and I was so jealous of the fact, because I had an Xbox, it was exclusively for PlayStation for the longest time. So now that the show is actually for all of these games, or excuse me, all these consoles, maybe yeah. I'll play it again. But then I realized that whenever I play sports video games, I get angry and I throw my controller.
You do get angry.
Yeah.
Can confirm.
It's the small stuff.
All right.
Yeah. Fake sports in a video game.
As Sean Mapes pointed out, you literally sweat the small stuff.
Yes.
All right. We asked you this question last segment. We've asked it on Twitter and Twitch and whatnot. Who's a draft, a former draft player that you were just completely wrong about? And it can go either way. Either you thought they'd be really great and they whiffed, or you did not believe in them and they went on to be great. Here's some that we've gotten on the text line. Vince Young, Jadeveon Clowney. My friend Jed in Cincinnati said, I thought Ryan Mallett was going to be really good. And then we had a couple, like somebody
Texan
said
legend.
David Carr, Malik Hooker. So we've gotten some interesting answers. What say you, Paul? Who were you just really gung-ho for and they ended up not being great, or vice versa?
So Jake Locker murdered Syracuse University, my first ever college football game that I went to while I was attending college.
Okay.
He, with the University of Washington, they came into the Carrier Dome. It was a Friday night, and he was just running all over the place, making all these incredible throws on the run. And I was like, oh, my God, this guy's incredible. So I thought for sure that Jake Locker was going to be a home run. And I was like, wow, he lasted as far as he did. The Titans got him, too. This is gross. And Jake Locker, obviously, was not a good quarterback in the NFL. So as far as guys that I thought would be good, yeah, that was a big swing and a miss for me. As far as guys I thought would be bad, I remember there once was a time where while I was over at the Texans flagship and I wasn't happy, so I was looking to apply to jobs elsewhere, and there was a job opening in Oregon. So I watched the Oregon Ducks versus Wyoming game where Josh Allen played, and I actually did a segment where I just made fun of Josh Allen for 15 minutes, and I sent it in as part of this job application where I just destroyed Josh Allen, and I thought he was going to be terrible. He was so bad in that game. Like, the rest of Wyoming actually played well, and Josh Allen was missing guys by, like, 30 yards.
Late bloomer.
He looked terrible. And I thought to myself, oh, this guy sucks. And then the Bills drafted him, and I was like, yes, this is great. This is great news for my fanhood. And his first year, I mean, we saw that game between the Texans and the Bills in the playoffs where he's throwing bombs 50 yards downfield to fullbacks in triple coverage. And on top of that, he's randomly just lateraling.
So you're almost defending how you felt at that time.
Yes, I am defending how I felt at the time. I think if anyone thought that Josh Allen was going to be good after his first year or after having watched him, you were crazy. To Josh Allen's credit, he has shut all the haters up, including myself. Like, I am fully a Josh Allen believer. But Allen is the guy I was by far the most wrong on. I thought he was going to suck. And I watched him, and I spent effort watching him.
That's the thing with Josh Allen, though. If you're a doubter, which I also was, you were right for the first 2 years of his career.
And then
he turned into an MVP candidate.
Yep.
There's no time where you're like, you know, I see the tools. It was off and then on.
Usually when you say, like I said, he was a late bloomer. People usually, when they say late bloomer, mean in college. Josh Allen was a late bloomer in the NFL and then has like the potential to take his team to a Super Bowl. That is very, very, because like you said, it wasn't just his rookie year. It was really the first 2 years. We've seen like Troy Aikman, Peyton Manning, a lot of guys have bad rookie years. But he had a rough first couple years, and then now he's just been on fire.
No doubt.
I was wrong about Josh Rosen. We had talked about this. I was definitely wrong. I believed in Josh Rosen, and I really believed in Trent Richardson. And let me tell you, when Ryan Grigson got him to the Colts, I was like, man, great move.
General manager of the year, Ryan Grigson.
Traded the first pick for him.
Why would you think anything would go wrong when you've got Griggy Bear running the show?
Didn't work out. Let's check the text line. 9227 says, I thought 100% Jalen Strong was going to be a stud, even called the Texans training up and getting him where they did. Womp, womp. Had a couple of those.
Some other ones. I imagine there are a lot of people who are
as you said, wrong about Sam Darnold. I just am racist against USC quarterbacks and Ohio State quarterbacks. I just, by default, assume they will fail because the track record says they will fail every single time. Like, Carson Palmer is the only possibly successful USC quarterback. And I guess after that, who's number two? Is it Rodney Pete? You know, because you had Todd Marinovich, you had Matt Barkley, Mark Sanchez, Sam Darnold. There's so many guys who've come in and you're like, ooh, gross.
We got a tweet that brought up a good point. Not football, but was stunned by how good Steph Curry ended up being. I think that's one where most people were like, yeah, I didn't see that coming just due to the size and the overall nature of how basketball is. But yeah, a lot of draft busts and then a lot of guys that end up emerging. That's why when you see the draft reports of like TJ Watt saying that he's not twitchy enough and not, you know, like fast enough, you realize that the draft really is kind of, as Nick Caserio said, especially with this one, a crapshoot.
It's affected me though, these thoughts that I've had about players. I really spent a lot of time watching Josh Allen. Like, I am not...
Like, you broke down film. You were like Lance Zierlein breaking down
film. Not to Lance Zierlein's degree, but I did watch a ton of him.
I'm picturing Paul Gallant. I want to leave the flagship so badly. I'm going to send in the best analysis.
And obviously nothing like Lance Zierlein, because you were completely wrong.
Yep, 100%. Completely wrong, to the point where now, when it comes to anyone's draft evaluations, I'm sort of like, yeah... Okay, maybe, maybe not. It's the most mamby-pamby, middle-of-the-road thing, and it's probably bad for my actual career that when I look at guys coming out of the draft now, I'm basically just like, I mean, it might work, it might not. But, I mean, that's how I feel about the draft now. And Josh Allen is legitimately the reason that I'm in this spot. I suppose I need to, at some point, get my fastball back, get my hot take gun out of my holster, and, you know, twirl it around my fingers and start shooting from the hip again. Pow, pow, pow. But I can't. He has legitimately made me think, you know what? I'm never going to have an extreme opinion on any draft pick ever again, because we don't bleeping know. And it's funny that we had this build up to the draft where people are like, this is the guy, this is the guy. And some of these people actually have watched it. And for the most part, a lot of people are talking out of their ass. I choose to be one of those people that knows what he doesn't know. And I know that I don't know whether or not any of these guys are going to pan out.
1143 on the text line brings up a good point, because if you just tuned in, we're talking about when you were wrong about draft picks. Everyone who booed J.J. Watt. It's a great point.
I was one of them.
There were a lot of people that did not like
when
J.J.
Watt
was taken by the Texans.
Johnny Manziel tweets Terry. Johnny Manziel.
But there are some, to your credit, like, there are some that we were all wrong about because they genuinely, like, he was so good at that time.
He was.
Josh Allen was not good. Not great at the time.
No, he wasn't very good in college. I think he had potential that you always saw. Manziel was incredible in college. Like, the Johnny
One
Manziel,
of the best college players ever.
It was a lot of fun to watch Johnny Manziel. I remember being there at his first game. It was against Florida, and we were on the sideline, me and John Cassio, and we were watching it, and I was like, who is this guy? I had no idea who he was. I didn't know, you know, I didn't think he would all of a sudden by the end of the year be the bleeping Heisman winner. But there he was doing all these little figure eights behind the line of scrimmage and essentially doing like hook shots over his shoulders, bombing it downfield to Mike Evans. But, I mean, the guy, he enjoyed himself. I don't know that it ever would have worked out for him had he not had such fun off the field. But the fun off the field is clearly something that was always going to keep him from being the guy he needed to
be. It's his priority at this point. And his ex-wife, by the way, is having a baby with Nick Cannon.
How many people has Nick Cannon had babies with?
Well, he said he was celibate like 6 months ago, and then Johnny Manziel's ex announced that she was pregnant. So apparently the celibacy did not end up working out, guys. Spoiler alert.
Nick Cannon likes having kids.
He does. Yeah, he's got a lot of them.
Listen, as long as you pay for them, it's fine.
Yeah.
He likes having kids, though.
The draft is, there was something on NFL Network yesterday morning, and I may butcher this statistic, but I think they had a statistic where it was like 40% of the guys taken in the first two rounds aren't playing in the NFL in 4 years.
Yeah, I mean...
So it really is. I mean, you hate to throw up your hands and say none of it matters, but in the big picture perspective, Mitch Trubisky got taken before Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson.
Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield before Josh Allen, right? And I mean, at the time, that made a lot more sense than drafting Josh Allen first overall. Lamar Jackson at the back of the first round in that draft. I remember thinking the Jaguars were going to draft him. I was in the Texans draft room with Mark Vandermeer and some of the and John Harris, and we were covering the draft, and everyone was basically like biting their fingers because we all thought that the Jaguars were going to take Lamar Jackson, and everyone was like, no, this can't happen. And I forget who they took instead, and there's this massive collective sigh of relief when it happened. I thought it was really funny, but you really don't know a damn thing. And yeah, I guess maybe I need to have opinions again, but when it comes to the NFL draft, I choose not to.
That's fine. We all have to find our peace somewhere.
Yes.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, there is somebody that's going to be making big draft decisions. He wears a vest. He sits at NRG Stadium behind a desk, and it is Nick Caserio. We heard from him yesterday. I actually was happy with some of the insight we got from him. We'll take you through it next.
ESPN 97.5.